This is Phil Farron. And I am driving around. So I'm actually home at the moment. And I'm going to see if I can make it out of my garage, which I don't think I'll have any trouble doing that. But the question is, after I've made it out of my garage, just how far can I get down our driveway and et cetera, because I'm going to need this tomorrow morning. I'm going to need it early. Because I'm going to breakfast. We've had quite the week here. We had our kind of late February snow. Thankfully, it was not nearly as bad as forecast. Our poor weathermen here, we actually had one of them apologize on Facebook this week because the whole time, oh, look here, this is all bare asphalt. Yay! Little slick getting out onto it, but so we had one of our weathermen, Brandon Beck, actually apologized on Facebook because for almost a week they've been predicting that we were going to have 12 inches in Springfield. And they were saying 8 to 12, and then as we got closer they were going, no, it's really going to be 12 to 14. And when it was all said and done, we had about 6, a little over 6. So then they were embarrassed. But, you know, hey, it's Springfield. This happens all the time in Springfield. However, in addition to that, we have also had four Springfield frigid temperatures. I mean, we've been down below zero. We just are coming out of that now. If this morning, overnight, was really the cold one. And it was, you know, -5, -7, -3. According to my little register on my phone for Fairgrove, I'm showing 8 degrees and it's 4:30 in the afternoon, and it really didn't get much better than that. Our thermometer on our porch shows 19. It is out of the wind. It is protected a little bit, so who knows? We might get again a little reading off the wood that it's hung next to because the sun has been shining on the wood. But the sun has been out all day, and so, like, I'm on what's called H Highway now, and it's just bare asphalt, so we're good. So that means I'll be good to go in tomorrow, which, yay, that's good. Get in and have breakfast, see my friend. So that's been exciting. We were off 2 days this week, and one of those days, Dustin was working. So we had Aiden at our house on Wednesday, and he did fine. It's really interesting, because when that kiddo wants to communicate, he can speak extremely clearly. When he doesn't want to communicate, he just does his own thing. So yeah, it's very interesting. Anyways, aside from that, work was good. I only worked 2 days this week, so I kind of had a preview of what this is going to be like here in about 4.5 months, and I kind of like it. Because those 2 days I was off, that Tuesday and Wednesday, that really helped getting caught back up on the writing and getting the costume finished up. And so, you know, I can see myself doing this type of a work schedule where I'm just working a couple of days a week or shortened hours on 3 or 4 days a week, et cetera, et cetera. We'll get that all filled out, figured out eventually. But that's 4.5 months away now, so I'm looking forward to that. So that was work. Writing is good. I'm into the epilogues. There will actually be 2 epilogues. In this book, I'm into the epilogues, so I have to make those happen. The first epilogue is designed to be a little dramatic and introduce additional tension into the whole series, and then the second epilogue is designed to be sentimental. And so hopefully I have all those pieces in play that I can bring in and we'll see. I would hope to get book 22 roughed in and landed this weekend, and then I can start my read through. And then once I get my read-through done, then we'll try to do one of those AI covers again. I think I am going to maybe move to an AI tool that allows you to define style. So I was just watching a review of one called Freepik, freepik.com with a K, F-R-E-P-I-K.com. And it uses... It's sort of an aggregator, plus they have their own models for things, but it does allow you to define your own style on it. And you just do that by uploading a bunch of pictures. So I thought I would just upload a bunch of covers. You know, the 21 covers that I've done, I thought I'd just go ahead and upload those and then just come up with what I want on the cover and see what we can do. I know the last time it came together very quickly. I mean, it was astonishing. So we'll see. Maybe I just didn't have high enough standards, but we'll just see how that goes. Costumes are going fine. Having those 2 days off this week really was ideal, because this weekend is Tell a Fairy Tale. And I have a great bit for it, but the bit is long. And so I may modify that. I have the whole fairy tale of the movie The Princess Bride done in a fairy tale style. So I've got that. I've got all the characters I need for that. I've got all the backdrops on my little puppet stage that I built. You know, there's a lot of moving pieces with doing the full fairy tale. So I may just ask people what their favorite scene is from A Princess Bride and then just fake it. I should have enough characters that I can fake it, and I could just fake it. So we'll see. That all worked out fine. It does all fold down into the little suitcase that I built it all on, but then when it opens up, it really doesn't look like it would all fold down in there, but it does, so that's fun. So I got my ringmaster costume, since the ringmaster is kind of a storyteller, and I thought, well, there's a loose connection there, and so I'll just do that. But I like the costume. My wife likes the costume. We're good. Need to find a place to turn around here. Start heading back the other direction. I didn't honestly really know what I was going to chat about today. I have one more Jordan Peterson podcast that I have queued up to talk about at some point. And it is yet another diet podcast. And it is a guy who is talking about the role of carbohydrates in our diet. It's very, very interesting. And the effect of the FDA food pyramid, and who actually put that food pyramid together. And he talks about a bunch of stuff like that. It's not stuff that I haven't touched on before. But something came up yesterday, and it started in one place, and then someone made mention of something, and I went, wait, what? And so then I went and I looked it up, and sure enough, this actually happened. So it's so interesting. This is going to be so interesting. And I've just been gathering little bits and pieces here from other videos on this topic. But just as a little pop quiz, it might be interesting for me to just kind of read you some quotes, and then you can kind of guess who said it. So this person was part of a panel. Okay, this is a little slick here. I'm slowing down to a stop sign. This person was on a panel on the Piers Morgan show, and so they got to talking about the COVID vaccines. And you know, when I started looking it up, it was like, and oh, there it is. So this person was explaining what they had done wrong in public health by not explaining the COVID vaccine is unlike childhood vaccines. The person said, the childhood vaccines, like many of the diseases you get once, you don't get again. And this is getting the children to have that disease without getting the deadly consequences. That is not what the COVID vaccine was designed to do. It wasn't designed to prevent infection. If you look at the vaccine hesitancy rates, they've doubled since COVID. This person went on to insist we have to start addressing these things and cannot just ignore them. And when this person was asked if they were concerned about the long-term impacts of the COVID vaccine, this person said that the shots were given to the wrong people. Quote, the messenger RNA vaccine should have been rolled out for the people that were at risk for severe disease, because that's what the vaccine was developed for. When we say that we're following the science and the data, we need to follow the science and the data. And the science and the data said people primarily over 65 or people with significant comorbidities were at risk for severe disease. Those are the individuals that should have been immunized first, and we should have put our science behind our immunization schedule and protected those most at risk. This person went on to say that the vaccines ended up going into young people at hospitals before going into the elderly people in nursing homes. That's not following the science, this person reiterated. So I am all for following the science and the data, but it shouldn't just be a statement. It should be a reality. And when we don't match what we do in public health to the science and the data, that's where we get into trouble. Okay, so, okay. This person also said that I knew the vaccines were not going to protect against infection. I think we overplayed the vaccines, and it made people then worry that it's not going to protect against severe disease and hospitalization. It will, but let's be very clear. 50% of the people who died from the Omicron surge were older and vaccinated. That's why I'm saying if you get vaccinated and boosted, if you're unvaccinated right now, the key is testing and Paxlovid. It's effective. It's a great antiviral. And really, that is what's going to save your lives right now if you're over 70, which if you look at the hospitalization, and hospitalizations are rising steady with new admissions, particularly for those over 70. So if you live in the South, I know I keep talking about fall. I'm worried about the South. Okay, now here's what's amazing about that. That seems like a very balanced approach to the COVID vaccine. Indeed, my wife and I had a discussion about the COVID vaccine. And she said to me at one point, I think I need to get vaccinated. And I said, sweetie, I think you do as well. Because my wife, at the time, was already over 60. She was crowding into 65. She just turned 68. And she has comorbidities. I mean, she has comorbidities. Let's just put it that way. She's probably insulin resistant. She has been in and out of the diabetic range for multiple years. All those things were comorbidities, because what killed you in COVID was not the virus. What killed you was your body's histamine response, because after you had the virus, your body went into a histamine response called a cytokine storm. It's where your immune system gets overloaded and it starts attacking everything. There's a severe level of inflammation. Your body just freaks out. And it's because you have a weakened immune system and it doesn't know how to deal with all the spike protein that's left over after you have COVID. And so I told her, sweetie, I think that would be a good idea as well. So she got vaccinated. I didn't get vaccinated. I was never going to get vaccinated, because I had read enough about COVID that I knew that only the people who had comorbidities were being hospitalized. I knew that the people who were dying from COVID all had comorbidities, that people with healthy immune systems were not dying of COVID. And I knew that if it did turn severe, I knew exactly what I needed to do to fix that. And in fact, when Lynette, even after she was vaccinated, because the vaccines really, their efficacy only lasts, you know, 3 or 4 months. And there's more and more people coming forward now saying, yeah, they don't really prevent you getting the disease, and they don't really prevent you from transmitting the disease, and they never did. And that's basically what this person is saying here, that we sold these vaccines as doing one thing when they never did that. And you had the President of the United States, Joe Biden, claiming that the only people who were getting COVID was the ones who weren't vaccinated, and it was a plague, you know, of the unvaccinated. And the only reason people were having troubles is because they just wouldn't go get the jab. And he was telling people, you just need to go get the jab, you know, because he was telling people that. So what's fascinating about this is that everything this person is saying at this point, I agree with. And in fact, you can find other people who are saying the same thing at the time that we are in the middle of all this stuff. And uniformly, if you dared to say those type of things, like, you know what, we should just vaccinate people who are 65 and older or who have comorbidities, and we should let everybody else go, you were excoriated. I mean, excoriated for being someone who wasn't concerned about people's health, and you just wanted people to die, and you were canceled, and you were shoved off social media, and you were all this stuff happened to you. If you dared, I'm backing into my garage. There is still a little snow on the driveway, so we'll see how this goes. Going in. Come on, puppy. Going in. And so you didn't dare say something like, you know what, the only reason to get the vaccine is if you have comorbidities. I didn't quite get lined up correctly because it's shoving my car around here. If you had, you know, you couldn't say that. I mean, Jay Bhattacharya and two other epidemiologists tried to bring some reason to all of this with the Great Barrington Declaration, saying that these are the people we need to focus on. It's the people who, you know, are 65 and nursing homes, those kind of things. We need to focus on these people, let everybody else go back to work, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And the great Francis Collins and Anthony Fauci orchestrated a takedown of those ideas because they couldn't have those ideas spread. They just couldn't have it. Why couldn't they have it? Well, they couldn't have it because if you were just going to focus on people who were in nursing homes or had comorbidities as the people that you were going to give shots to, the pharmaceutical companies were going to make significantly less money. But if you could scare everybody into taking the shots and give them to billions of people, well, in that case, then Pfizer would be able to make $33 billion in the first year, or whatever the figure, enormous figure was. And the really fascinating thing is the person who is making all of these statements on the Piers Morgan show was Dr. Deborah Burke, who was in charge of the COVID task force in the White House under both Trump and Biden, who was one of the main sources for what the vaccines do and how we should administer it and all that sort of thing. And now that we're 5 years later, she comes out and starts claiming all these things that she knew about the vaccine, but she sure didn't say anything about it at the time. It's really fascinating. It's really, really fascinating. Now, you know, we're in the rewriting history stage. Now then, so what to do about all this? Because that's the important part. What to do about all of this? Well, Deborah Burks can say anything that she wants to say. I think there are enough people who will remember what Deborah Burks said and what she did that it's not really going to play very well that she was just, well, I knew this all along. It's like, oh, really? Now then, but honestly, what should our reaction be to this? Should we get all up in arms and be angry and, you know, shake our fists and rail? No, we shouldn't. Because in all of this, in every moment of our lives, we have a choice. And I've been talking to friends about this choice for a couple of weeks now, revisiting it with them. And I may have even mentioned it on the podcast. But this is a classic example of this. Okay, first of all, it is absolutely true that Deborah Burks never talked about the COVID vaccine this way before now. Because literally, people are going, what? But that doesn't mean we should be angry and shaking our fists, because anger and shaking our fists is a flesh response. So you can have something that's true, that as I recall it, Deborah Burks absolutely misrepresented the truth. And she may be speaking the truth now, but when she needed to speak the truth,
she didn't. Well, the pharmaceutical companies have made all their money now. So, but that doesn't mean we should be angry and railing against Deborah Birx because, A, that's not going to change anything, and B, that's just destruction for us. And that's the key. Yes, it may be true that she misrepresented the truth and she didn't do what she could have done if she was actually convinced of those things. What's interesting is that her whole polemic on we have to follow science and we have to follow the data is contradicted by Scott Atlas's book, A Plague on Our House. Because Scott Atlas was in the room with Deborah Birx and Anthony Fauci at the White House in the briefings. And according to Scott Atlas, who's very learned, he said, I would go into those meetings where we were supposed to be providing guidance for COVID. And I would bring study after study after study to show them that masks weren't working, that we could do this, that we could do that, that we needed to do this, that he would bring in the data. And he said, I'm the only one bringing in the data. And I'm trying to get them to make some sensible decisions based on the data. And the rest of them all just stared at me and then went on and guessed. And Anthony Fauci has revealed that, yes, like things like you have to stay 6 feet apart. That was just a guess. They didn't know that was going to do anything. And as it turns out, it probably didn't do anything. Because it's an airborne virus. 6 feet is not going to make any difference. If you walk through a cloud of particles after someone sneezed, it's not going to make any difference if they'll hang in the air. Just like masks. Before COVID, everybody knew that you couldn't stop the spread of respiratory viruses with masks, especially not the way consumers wear masks. Now, if you were a trained medical professional and you had an N95 and it was properly fitted and you did all the things you were supposed to do, that yes, maybe that would help. But not the way people were wearing them. So you've got Scott Atlas, who is on the scene in the committee meetings, writing a book about his experiencing, pointing out that no one in that room except him was bringing in any data to discuss. And even when he brought in data to discuss, everyone just ignored his data and kept just making decisions with their guts. And now you have one of the main people who are in those rooms, you know, those rooms saying, we have to trust the science and we have to follow the data. Okay, okay. But that's still not justification for getting angry, because anger is flesh and flesh is destruction. The thing I've been talking about my buddies about this week is that there's going to be all kinds of things that are going to be coming out during these first 2 years, during really probably the 4 years, where you are going to have journalists that are going to be making all sorts of claims about how Trump is ruining the country. And that. So the question is, when you read all this stuff, if you're not going to go do exhaustive data research on all of it, how in the world do you make a decision as to what you believe and you don't believe? I mean, one fun example is, not fun, but you know what? It's the American Airlines that flipped upside down on takeoff. And you've got all these pundits and media people saying, see, you know, this could be a direct result of all those cuts that Trump has made to all this, you know, because we just don't have experienced people and we're shorthanded now. And we're in the United States. And apparently none of them bothered to do any research to find out that that accident actually happened in Canada, not the United States, and that the plane was under Canadian control at the time. Maybe they do know that and they don't care, because they're just trying to find anything they can to get people stirred up, angry, afraid, anxious, etc., etc., etc. So a really good rule to follow on all of this stuff that you see coming out, on all the headlines, on all of it, is if you feel yourself responding with anger, anxiety, trepidation, hate, anything that disturbs your peace, you just need to take a step back and say, oh, so what's the truth here? Because what's really interesting is that your flesh cannot help but exploit an opening. And the other thing that's really interesting is that your flesh does appear to be extremely intelligent and very adept at invoking things that are probably sketchy. It somehow picks up that emotional resonance of things that have been created by the flesh, other people's flesh, to cause you distress. And it's really good about sensing those things and just moving in on you. So if you feel that coming up in your spirit, pause. Pause. Take a breath. Say, what do I need to do to go determine if this is true, or do I just want to chalk it up to yet more rabid press reporting simply to get clicks? And again, it doesn't matter whether that information is true or false. What matters is what's happening into your heart, because the flesh creates noise in your heart. Noise makes it harder for you to hear the voice of Jesus. If you're having a hard time hearing the voice of Jesus, you're going to do things that are driven by flesh and put you one step closer to destruction. There's a really interesting example that I came across as I was just kind of doing a little research on this whole COVID-19 vaccine thing. And it had to do with the guys from Trigonometry discussing the COVID-19 season with Piers Morgan. And Constantine Kissin jokingly reminded Piers Morgan that, you know, this is a little while ago, you know, they'd gotten to be friends and stuff. And Constantine Kissin said, oh, so does that mean that you're going to unblock me on Twitter? Because apparently, at one time, Piers Morgan was just railing against people who weren't getting vaccinated. And Constantine Kissin said, you know, there's a lot of viewpoints here, and maybe you should just slow down a little bit. And he just blocked him. And so they got to talking about that. And Piers Morgan admitted that he had gotten too emotional about the whole thing when he was, early on, and he had believed everything he had been told, and he'd gotten upset about it. And so, yeah, he was railing at people like, what is wrong with you people? Just get the jab so we can get this taken care of. Okay, well, what is that? That's a flesh response. It's a flesh response. There's no question. He was doing it because he was angry. He was doing it because he was anxious. He was doing it because he felt out of control. What was making him feel anxious and angry and out of control? Was it the facts of the COVID vaccine and all the things swirling around it? No, because if he had done his research, like many people did, he would realize that there's multiple viewpoints. But what happened is he took the authority viewpoint and he allowed his flesh to just shove him forward, and he admitted as such. Now, what's interesting is that people always try to justify this. And one of the ways they justify it is they said, well, you know, if this was like a plague where 30 or 40% of people were dying, then, you know, my reaction would have been justified. Okay, but it wasn't the plague. That's the thing. It wasn't the plague. And it was clear early on that it wasn't the plague because there was a whole bunch of numbers that were in question. And if it had been the plague, those numbers would not have been in question. Hospitals would have been overrun. And yes, I know that Italy faced, but Italy has a lot of old people in it. And there were a lot of people that were just losing their minds. I remember we had like, I don't know how many weeks went by here in Springfield where they were saying, oh, it looks like all the numbers, we've seen these numbers before, all the projections say we're going to have a surge, we're going to have a surge in Springfield and all the hospitals are going to be overwhelmed. And then the week would come and then there would be no surge. And then they'd say, well, next week, it looks like the surge is going to be here. And then the week would come and then there would be no surge. And I knew a guy who was having to make a lot of very difficult decisions around that time as to what they were going to do, you know, in terms of shutting down or keeping open or all that kind of stuff. And like every week, yeah, they're just really saying the surge is coming next week. And I looked at him after several weeks to get it, and I just said, yeah, they said that last week. And he kind of looked at me shocked, like, what? Yeah, they said that last week. And they said it the week before last. And they said it the week before last. And we still haven't had a surge. So if their models are so good, where's the surge? And what should that tell us? So, you know, trying to mock up this hypothetical scenario that justifies the fact that you let the flesh get control of you is not really beneficial because the flesh is still in control of you. And even if COVID did have a 30 to 40% mortality rate, we would still all be better served if we just stayed calm. Now, if it had a 30, 40% terminal rate, would I have gotten vaccinated? Yeah, probably not still. And the reason had nothing to do with I don't feel any social responsibility. The reason very simply had to do with the fact that they indemnified the pharmaceutical companies. And I know enough about pharmaceutical companies to know that pharmaceutical companies have paid higher fines in lawsuits than any other industry because they are bereft of any morality. You just have to look at their history to see that. And in fact, one of the guys who was parroting that I knew that was parroting Biden's, well, it's a vaccine, you know, it's a plague on the unvaccinated. I said, is it? Yeah, that's right. And I just asked him at one time, I said, so don't you find it odd that now our heroes are the same companies who have been sued more than any other company in the history of companies for unethical and illegal practices? Those are our heroes now? And he just kind of looked at me and went, well, because that's true. And they didn't have a come to Jesus moment. In fact, they were given carte blanche and they rushed these things into production. Everyone I was listening to was saying, yeah, you normally take 5 years to test a vaccine. And they did it in months. And then they turned around and they vaccinated all the people in the control group. So after those months, you couldn't even continue to follow them to find out the differences in health outcomes between the control group and the vaccinated group. And everybody I was listening to was saying that is not done and that is the wrong thing. And there was this whole business of absolute risk versus real relative risk. I mean, there was all kinds of sketchy stuff going on in those. So no, I still wouldn't have taken it. Even if COVID had had a 30 to 40% mortality rate, which it didn't. But I think the real lesson here is no matter what the crisis is, stay calm. Stay under the umbrella. Love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. And if you're out from underneath that umbrella, you need to just take a pause. because you're probably in the flesh, and the flesh is destructive. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.